Today we're looking at really the most powerful thing we have at our disposal. I would say it's one of the most powerful things in the world. We are looking at that which has built up kingdoms, that which has divided kingdoms. We're looking at that has split families. We are looking at that has destroyed personalities. We are looking at the thing that has made marriages work and destroyed marriages. We're looking at the power of your words. And we're going to look at that from the Proverbs. This is our 12th study in Proverbs. And we're going to look at it from 1 Proverbs 6 and then chapter 16. I've put the verses for you in the bulletin so you wouldn't have to be flipping around, because if you're like me, you wouldn't be able to find them until I'm done. So please read with me from Proverbs chapter 6. A worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech. He winks with his eyes, he signals with his feet, he points with his finger, and with a perverted heart he devises evil. He's continually sowing discord. Therefore, calamity will come upon him suddenly, and in a moment he will be broken beyond healing. Whoever gives thought to the word will discover good, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. The wise of heart is called discerning, and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. Good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instruction of fools is folly. The heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. A worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. A man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him away in that which is not good. Whoever winks his eyes plans dishonest things. He who purses his lips brings evil to pass. And whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he who rules his spirit is better than he who takes a city. Thus far, the reading of God's Word. One time I was at a lake with a friend of mine, staying with his family. We had spent the day skiing, and we were talking. And I was, at that point in my life, it was the summer before I got my first job, the summer right after I graduated college, and right before I was going to go off and be an RUF intern. And for those of you who've been there with me, then you know that was the summer that I was the smartest human being on the face of the earth. I was very, very intelligent that year because, well, it's obvious. And so I was talking, and by talking, I mean I was spouting off my wisdom for everyone else to learn from, and meeting this guy's family. And his mother was very sweet, and we began talking. And for some reason, the topic of ovarian cancer came up. And I had just learned that ovarian cancer was a socially transmitted disease. And I was explaining to her this, and she said, "I don't think so." And I said, "No, it is. That's the only way you can possibly get it, is socially. I've been told this, I've studied this, I know." And she kept kind of gently saying, "I don't think you're right there." And I kept getting more and more assertive that, "No, it absolutely is. The only way you can get it is through immorality." And she said, "Well, I have ovarian cancer, and I'm pretty sure I didn't get it that way." Have you ever been deeply offensive to someone and only found out about it later? Some of us have been deeply offensive to people, and we kind of meant to be. But, I mean, find out about it far later, and there's nothing you can do, and you just feel not only stupid, but dirty. Caught. When we study the Bible, what we find out about our words, what I want you to understand about your words is this. God takes them very seriously. God notices every word that we say. He listens. And he is deeply offended by the way we talk to and about each other. God loves us. He made us in his image. When he sees us, he sees the perfect picture of his son. And if you saw someone spitting on a picture, if you saw someone cursing a picture, hating a picture, you would think to yourself, well, this person hates ink and paper. He's spitting on paper, right? Of course not. You would think, this person hates the person in that picture. And when God hears us, the way we talk about each other and sees us assassinating each other's character, he sees us offending his own son, spitting on the image of his own son. And he's deeply offended by our words. He's deeply offended. And he's given us very clear directives on what he expects from us. This is all he expects from us. He expects that we would not spread a bad report. You hear something bad about someone, you hear something that someone has done, he expects you to let it drop. Just let it go. He expects that you would not complain. We think, now why is that a big deal? Well, if you read the Old Testament, which every now and then is a good exercise, then you'll find out that when God redeemed, brought his people out of slavery in Egypt, they were in the wilderness and they were complaining about the food. And he was so angry about it that he wanted to kill them. He sent snakes in to bite them. He had just redeemed them out of slavery at the cost of the firstborn son of Egypt. And yet they complained about food. I wonder how he feels about our complaining when at the cost of his own firstborn son, he has redeemed us out of sin. He's redeemed us out of our death and our darkness that we loved. He's brought us to freedom. And we complain because we really need the stock market to never go down. And we really need it to be 10 degrees less hot. And we complain and we complain. And we ignore the fact that the Son of the universe has been given for us. He expects us to not criticize. He expects us to not blame shift. If we've done something wrong, if something is our fault, he expects us to just take it. To admit that it's our fault and move on. He expects us to not defend ourselves. To not justify ourselves. When someone is pointing out, criticizing us, pointing out something we've done wrong, he expects us to take it. Instead of trying to defend ourselves, he wants to be the one to defend us. He wants to be the one to vindicate us. He expects us to not boast. Everything that we have, he has given us. When we boast, we're taking credit for something that he's given us. He expects us to boast, not even backdoor boasting. You know, he expects us to avoid saying things like, it's hard for me to watch America's Got Talent because I have perfect pitch. He expects us to let him get the glory that he deserves. And he expects us to be honest, to not deceive others, to not spend our time trying to manipulate long and intricate excuses and stories so that we can manipulate someone without actually ever technically telling a lie. He says that is one of the passages I picked out. The one who deceives, who winks, who points, who makes motions with his feet. Saying, you know what I really mean, don't you? He never technically told a lie. He's just been deceitful. God expects us to not do any of those things. And I have come up with a great and perfect solution so that none of you will do any of those things this week. So if you'll all come up here, I'll get you fitted. No.
Well, it does seem obvious. Lost my mic.
It seems obvious that if God wants all these things from us or wants us to stop doing all these things, why wouldn't he just take away the tongue? You know, with all the damage that language has done, that words have done over history, why hasn't evolution been smart enough to take away our tongues? Well, because your mouth is capable of great good. If I ask you to give a list right now of the sweetest, most important compliments you've ever received, most of you, if not all of you, could come up with them like that. You remember them just off the top of your head. a football coach in 1985 said to my brother, Ricky should really go far in life. He's actually pretty smart. I don't have a long list of compliments to draw from. Don't make fun of me. What's the best compliment you ever received? That one got me through college, so back off. Our words, the Proverbs say, our words are a tree of life. They give love and hope and joy. So how do we redeem them? How can we take them away from this situation where they do so much damage, where they're so hurtful, and use them for life? How can we prepare for that day when Jesus says, I tell you on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they have spoken? How can we at one and the same time prepare for that day, live in sight of that day, and yet talk, and yet speak? I think there are three things we have to do. What I want to do with us today is I want us to do three things. I want us to recognize and understand the power of words. Secondly, I want us to purify the source of our words. And finally, I want us to learn how to use our words to give life, okay? We're going to see the power of words. I want you to see it. Then we're going to recognize, we're going to go and look at how we can purify them. And then finally, we're going to learn how to use them to give life. So the first thing I want you to see is the power of words. Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. Now, even the most, just atheistic scientist, evolutionist would tell you that there's a vast difference between just the noises of an animal who can use their voices to, scare prey and maybe, for protection, and the words, the power of words in a human. Why is that? Why is that power there? Well, the Bible tells us that before there was anything, God spoke. The very first words of the Bible, God said, let there be light. And there was light. God said, let there be dry land. God said, let the waters recede. God said, let the earth bring forth vegetables and vegetation. God said, let the earth bring forth animal life. God said, and at the power of His Word, things happened. That very in the very fabric of creation is the power of words. But there's more than that, because as we know, men rebelled and we sought our independence and we didn't want to find our identity in God. And so God came back down to the earth and He spoke curse. He spoke into the earth weeds, and He spoke into man sweat, and He spoke into woman pain in childbirth, and He spoke death. And those things existed. And in the very fabric of our being, in the very fabric of creation, we have words that have the power of life and the power of death. And then when God came to redeem man, John the Apostle writes for us in John 1, the Word became life and dwelt among us. And in that relationship where our preaching becomes Jesus speaking, and when we hear the gospel preached, when we hear the good news of what Jesus has done to save us, at that point we're hearing Him, and His words redeem us. His words give us life. And so we have, in the power of words, we have the power of life and the power of death and the power of redemption. And He created us in His image, and creating us in His image give our words incredible power. The power to curse and the power to give life. Your words have the power to destroy. Proverbs 12:18 says, the one who is rash with words, the one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. The words of the rash are like the thrusts of swords. Think of it, that's a perfect illustration. Gee, the Bible's really complimented that I would say it's perfect. But that's a perfect illustration. A word is like a sword. And when you hurt somebody with a word, the damage is done. Right? You know that. If you stick a sword into somebody, the damage is done. You can pull the sword out. The damage is done. If they heal at all, they will be scarred forever. And that's the problem with words. Once they're out there, there's no pulling them back. They're out there. And once a heart receives them, they're received. Once distrust is sown, it is sown. And there's no getting them back. The words penetrate. We walk around with vulnerabilities. We really assume that you don't like me. I assume that you don't like me. And so when you say a rash word, you're confirming my assumption. We walk around vulnerable to them. And it makes them powerful. R.C. Sproul talks about doing marriage counseling with this couple. And they'd only been married a little over a year. But the bride had become more and more frigid and more withdrawn. And was just absolutely convinced that her husband hated her and didn't want anything to do with her. And so she wanted nothing to do with him. And as he listened to them and talked to them, she began to describe her life as a late bloomer in a small town where she was made fun of. And over as she grew and went through puberty, she had just terrible acne. But nature took its course and turned her into a beautiful lady. And one time she was walking through class and she had thick Coke bottle glasses and terrible complexion, and yet she had the body of a woman and the person of a teenager. And she heard one of her classmates say, "Well, you look at four eyes, if you put a bag over her head, she wouldn't be bad looking." And she believed that. And it defined her. And it defined her so deeply that she believed her husband thought that about her. And she withdrew from him because she was afraid of vulnerability. She was afraid of being hurt that badly again. Words penetrate and they define us. We all know the old saying is stupid. Let's redefine it. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words could crush my soul. They cut right through. Words destroy individuals and they destroy groups. They not only penetrate like swords, but they spread like cancer. Repeating words stirs dissension. Repeating stories over and over again ruins families. It ruins marriages. It ruins churches. It disintegrates friendships. Proverbs 17 says, "Whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends." Sin is bad. Sin's bad. It degrades a person. It degrades you when you sin. But what rumors and gossip do is they keep the sin from ever healing. They keep it fresh. And they cause little things said rashly to become huge cancers that can't be healed. This church is young, and it's we have great days in our history, and we have terrible days in our history. And they're in common, and some things about them are in common. One, the greatest day in our church's history, from my perspective, is one day when we restored someone to the Lord's table. And we publicly restored him, and one of the great things about it was that after it was over, about 2/3 of the church had no idea what that was all about. It was like my shining moment. I was so thrilled for Redeemer that the rumor mill had never gotten started. That we had this public sin that had been healed. And one of the reasons why it was able to heal so completely is 2/3, 3/4 of the people in the church had no idea. That's beautiful. And I want to encourage you to be part of that healing by just being quiet. It happens. You have that opportunity all the time. You know, last spring, somebody thought they would serve the church by beginning to spread rumors about who was going to leave soon, who was getting tired of it here, who was about to be out of here. You know, and the choices were in front of us. Do we spread those rumors? Do we pick up the gauntlet? Do we call the people? Or do we follow the advice of Proverbs, where there is no rumor, a fire ceases? I mean, think about it. You know, these from old school days, right? Some guy says, "Man, I want to beat up so-and-so." Well, if everybody hears it, then they're going to keep repeating it. And now the guy can't back down from the fight, even though he's about to get killed. But if just nobody repeats it, if nobody hears it, no fight ever has to take place. The cancer could be cut out if it's kept small. The power of words, they penetrate and they spread, but they also give life. They have a positive power. Proverbs 16:22 through 24 says, "Good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instruction of fools is folly. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body." Isn't that awesome? Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. Words make plain people beautiful. Well, we started this series on the wisdom literature by looking at Song of Solomon. It is a great picture. The first kind of poem in Song of Solomon is this young bride looking to her groom, and what she says is, "Don't look at me. I'm not pretty. My skin is too dark. I had to work out in the sun. My skin is rough. Don't look at me. I'm embarrassed." And he sings praises over her, and he sings praises over her. And this crazy thing happens. She begins to believe him. And by the end of the Song of Solomon, she is saying, "I am a beautiful garden for my beloved." She's redefined. The power of words, you've seen it. You believe it. The old Christmas classic, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Right? Rudolph's ashamed. He's embarrassed. He doesn't want anybody to see him. He's got this big black thing on his nose. He's hideous. And what happens? Little Clarice calls him cute. "I think you're cute." And he believes her, right? And he goes bouncing off. "I'm cute. I'm cute." You act like y'all haven't seen this. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Rudolph, there's a song. You remember this scene? Is it just too hot? Gosh, y'all. Words make ashamed people feel joy. Words make condemned people feel forgiven. Words make broken people come to life. Words resonate. When we hear the gospel proclaimed, when we hear the good news of what Jesus did on the cross proclaimed, when we hear the message that he wants to have table fellowship with us, he wants us to come eat with him, it resonates deep in our soul and it draws out our joy. It draws out life. I love the line in the hymn. Jesus whispers this sweet sentence, "Son, your sins are all forgiven." He redefines us. He makes us into sons. He makes us into princesses. He redefines us if we believe his words. And we can speak those words to each other. We can speak those words to each other. You can offer those words to somebody today and redefine them and give them joy where there has been loneliness. Words have the power to kill, and words have the power to give life. Why is that? What makes them so powerful? The thing that makes them so powerful is that they reveal the heart. There's Proverbs that get at this, but no one says it as clearly as Jesus. In Matthew 15:18, he says, "What comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person." You ever just get mad at somebody and things start spewing out of your mouth? If you've never had that happen, then you can go ahead and leave now because I got nothing for you. If you've ever had it happen, though, you wonder where that came from. Where did that come from? Well, the ugly answer to that question is, it came from your heart. because you believed it. It's ugly. But you see, that's the truth about words. Let me show you. I'll give you an object lesson. A speaker that I listened to talks about when he was young, he was at a party, and his uncle got just wasted, just totally drunk, and started just spewing out racist stuff and just really bad, evil stuff. And his mother was embarrassed that this little boy had heard it all, and she pulled him out of the room. And after the party, she went to him and she said, "I want you to understand something. I'm really embarrassed that you heard that, but it was not the alcohol." She said, "A drunk never said a single thing that a sober person didn't believe." You need to understand that about your words. You need to pay attention to your words. Watch this. Object lesson. What just got on the floor? Why? Why? Did the water get on the floor because I shook it? No. Water got on the floor because it was in the bottle. The water was already there. I just shook it. Right? Traffic jam brings out profanity from you. It wasn't the traffic jam's fault. The profanity was in you. You see someone snubs you, you think. And you begin to say things that you think about that person. It wasn't the snub's fault. It was what you thought that got all over the people. What was in the bottle is what matters. If you have divisiveness in the bottle, then that's what's getting all over people. That's why your words have the power to hurt, because we know you wouldn't have said them if you hadn't thought them. And this water looks good. So if that's what makes them so powerful, how do we purify them? How can we purify our words? Well, the answer is we have to go and purify the well. We can't just try to doctor them up and clean them up. It's not the individual words that we say that matter. Are they dirty or clean? You can call it, you can use strong language or weak language. That's not affecting anything. That's just kind of filtering what comes out. Well, if we really want to cleanse our words, we have to purify our hearts. And that requires repenting of deeply held sins. It requires looking at ourselves, and we have to examine the words that come out and say, "Why do I say that?" It means we have to really look at it. If we are tempted to lie, we have to ask ourselves the question, what makes me want to lie? You know, hypothetical situation. I don't know. Let me just grab one somewhere. Bianca wants to go on a trip with some friends, and I don't want to go. And when I'm with those friends, I get bored. And it's football season. I don't know. Just pulling things out of the air here. And so, if I tell her that I don't want to go, I'm going to hurt her feelings. I don't want to hurt her feelings. And I don't want to go. So what do? I make up a lame excuse. Some people who would call it lying. Others would call it being, obfuscating. Getting around the truth. Being sneaky. Being wise as a serpent, but gentle as a dove. What am I doing? Well, she finds out the lame excuse is lame. Now I've hurt her feelings even worse. Now I've communicated, I don't like you. I don't want to be with you. I don't want to be with you so badly I would make up a lame excuse to avoid being with you. Now I've done more damage. What's the root sin? The root sin is I'm lazy. How could I adjust it? Well, I could just say, I love my wife so much, I don't care where we go as long as I'm with her. I could just do the work of loving her. Or I could do the work of being honest and say, you know, I love you, but I think you would have a better time with them without me, which is actually true because I'm going to pout. So I could either not pout and go or be honest about going, but instead I choose the easy path, the lie. That is what needs to be repented of, choosing the easy path. I need to be changed. It's a deep issue. You got to ask yourself that. I was talking with a friend of mine today, this week, and he told me he's going through a very difficult year at work, very difficult. A lot of lies, a lot of innuendo, a lot of slander. You wouldn't think things like that go on in the church unless you've never been in a church. And it's really just been ugly, and it's caused him to be angry. Deeply angry. And the problem is that his anger has gotten all over everybody, and it's affected his marriage like a cancer. And he's not mad at his wife, but he's mad at everybody. He's mad at one person, and he's so mad at that one person, and he can't address that anger at that one person. And so everybody else that he can be mean to, he is. And we have to let the gospel get down deep into us if that's us. And we have to go to Jesus and tell him how mad we are. And we have to look at him being made fun of and being slanderously accused and quietly taking it. And remember that he knows how we feel. We have to see him face lie after lie and slander after slander in our place and watch him quietly take it. And we have to ask him to heal us so that our anger doesn't ruin everything that it shouldn't. We have to get the gospel down deep. If by your very nature you are a complainer, then you have to ask yourself a hard question. Why is God giving his son not enough for me? Why is that not enough for me? Why is my job continually a failure? Why do I continually complain about my children, about everything around me? We have to get the gospel down deep. You could just filter your words and never change. But we need to get the gospel down deep and filter the source of the river and have it cleanse us so that we can be thankful. We have to deal with our heart in deep places. And once we begin to do that, is once we begin to hear what Jesus says about us, so we're not so insecure and our insecurities don't have to force us to say silly things. You know, if I'm just terribly, terribly insecure that you may not like me, then I'll lie to you right and left to just say whatever I think you want to hear to get you to like me. But if I'm so confident of who I am in Christ, that I can deal with your dissatisfaction, that I can live with you being disappointed with me, then I can actually be honest with you. And if I can actually be honest with you, my friendship may actually be worth a coin. And you can actually trust me. We have to get the gospel down deep, and so it makes us honest, and it makes us truthful, and it makes us kind. And then we begin to use our words wisely. And I have four lessons from the Proverbs on how to use our words wisely, and they'll be short. The first one is the hardest. To use our words wisely, to use our words to build up and give life, they have to be honest. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Once I've been, my heart has been healed, then now I don't have to use people to make people I hate think that I like them. My heart is being steadily changed. So I don't have to be corrupting my words and molding my words to send out something that's not true. I can be honest with you. What honesty is simply this. My words correspond to my reality. And my reality is actually okay. That's the problem, right? We lie when our reality is not okay. So if my deepest held truth about you is I don't like you, then I got to corrupt my words like crazy to try to get something better to come out. But if my deepest held feeling is I love you, I want what is best for you, then I don't have to be manipulating my words. And I can say the truth, right? Husbands, you get this? I'm trying to explain to you how to answer the question, does this dress make my butt look big? This is what you say. You say, I love how you look. And if that's not true, you need to go deal with Jesus. You need to become in love with what your wife looks like. I'm serious. She is a gift of God to you. She is your definition of beauty. So your answer is, I love how you look. And that dress is not flattering. And that's actually what she wanted to know. See? Honesty. It helped. You can do it. Now, that doesn't mean we use honesty to cover for being a jerk. Right? You watch reality TV shows, which none of you do because you're holy. But all those people out there watch reality TV shows and you hear somebody say, well, I'm just honest. That's why I don't have a friend. Really? Maybe it's because you're mean. Right? And maybe you just think the world is your platform for you to criticize and tear down everybody in the world because you don't like anybody. And you need to go deal with Jesus and you need to have your heart changed so that you're, instead of looking down on everybody else in the world, you see yourself as a sinner and you're looking up at everybody else in the world and you love them and in them you see Christ. Then you don't have to lie. That's what honesty means. It means speaking the truth in love. It means not trying to manipulate words so I can say, I can communicate something that's not really true, but and yet say that I never technically lied. It means communicating what I really feel, and it means changing what I really feel so that it's what I want to communicate. Does that make sense? If I hate you, I got to deal with that. I have to go to Jesus and deal with that. So that the truth, the truth is, I love you and I can speak the truth in love to you. I don't know how else to say it, so we'll go on to the next point because it'll make the sermon shorter. Point number two is, our words have to be honest, but they also have to be few. Few, that's nice. Proverbs 10:19, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. But whoever restrains his lips is prudent. Hate Proverbs. When words are many, transgression is not lacking. It takes a lot of words to tell a lie, doesn't it? It takes a lot of words. It's okay to say nothing. I've started listening to a new comedian named Mike Birbiglia, and he has this thing about moving into a new apartment, and a woman lets him into the apartment. And he says, she says, I don't know you, but I'll let you in because no rapist would ever have a bed that looks like that. And he responds by saying, he says, what I should have said was nothing. What I said was, oh, you'd be surprised. Friendship over, right? There's no chance that it's ever going to get better from that point on. I want you to go through this week asking yourself that question. Is what I should say nothing? It's okay to let rumors die with you. It's okay to let criticism die with you. It's okay to be the last one to hear this story. It's okay. Is what I need to say now nothing? I understand that some people are external processors. They need to speak. I understand in a lot of ways sometimes they're honest people. But we still have to ask ourselves a question. Am I saying this? Am I repeating this? Am I saying this because I love everybody involved and this is the best way for me to communicate that love? And if not, maybe what I should say is nothing. Our words need to be honest, our words need to be few, and our words need to be calm. Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Words spoken rashly are swords. He who restrains his words, he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Some things are hard to say, and you would only say them when charged with emotion. They should be hard to say. That's God putting a warning sign in there saying, don't say it. This applies to text messages. I'm a strong believer here. If you have something that you're just, if you find yourself hitting the phone hard, don't hit send. Something should be hard to say. It should be hard to say, I love you for the first time to somebody. You need to say it verbally in their presence. It'll keep you from saying it flippantly. Don't text it the first time. I mean, if you're up to like 10,000, okay, you can text it then. It should be hard to say, I hate you. It should be hard to say, I never want to see you again. It should be hard to pick a fight. It's not hard to type these words into a phone. Just put the phone down and calmly walk away. Restrain your words. One email a day, that's all you get from any one person. Use your words should be honest, they should be few, they should be calm, and finally they should be apt. I love this proverb. To make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season is how good it is. It's beautiful. It's this picture of a carefully chosen word used just at the right time. A carefully chosen word that's crafted, that's set perfectly. Apples of gold and silver and settings of silver, one Proverbs calls them. Words that actually mean something. You know, I've got some friends who talk all the time, and I listen about one third of the time. And there are some people, when I see them opening their mouth, I lean in because I know it's going to be good. I know it's going to be good. Carefully chosen words. If you've ever had the unfortunate experience that you will have one day of being in a funeral home, you know about 90% of what people say is not carefully chosen. It's just, I feel bad for you, and our words are coming out of my mouth. And they don't help. But you get about one good, well-written note, and you keep it forever. Aptly chosen words. Carefully chosen. To communicate that I love you and communicate something deep that gets to you, that shows to you that I know you. I know what's going to get to you. I know how to encourage you. I know what you need to hear. It's looking at somebody who respects you and saying, I am proud of you. Aptly chosen, not just thrown around. It's looking at somebody that you respect saying, thank you for letting me follow you. Thank you for being willing to lead. Aptly chosen. It can be deeply encouraging. Can be the difference between somebody just giving up and living their life. That's hard. It means you have to spend a little time thinking about somebody else. It means you have to get to know somebody, and you have to kind of go out on a limb and say something that might be taken as goofy. And it means your words might actually count. You know, I started today talking about being deeply offensive to people and not even knowing it. Sometimes the opposite is the case. You know, sometimes I look at my boys and they're just playing. They're just playing. Nothing fancy going on. But they're getting along. And they're loving each other without even meaning to. And it's deeply encouraging. And I look at them and I say, that's how I want you to look. Sometimes our words are deeply offensive to the Lord. And sometimes I think He looks at us and goes, that's why I gave you a tongue. That's awesome. That's exactly what I would have said if I'd been there. I was there. I said that, and you let me use you to do it. Will you be that? Please pray with me.